Oscar? Oscar, come on!
The snow resolved into a canvas ceiling supported by metal poles. Harsh sodium lights. The cache.
Oscar, look at me.
Therese's almond eyes, wet with concern, filled his vision. She waved a hand in front of him. Balanced on her fingertips was a steel insect, its segmented carapace still glossed with his blood. One end dangled a long wire, stinger-like. The other housed a clear plastic dome, pulsing a gentle blue light. Black numbers had been stenciled on the side.
We got it.
We got it. How are you?
He began to sit up, and the ball of pain in his chest expanded. His head swam with drugged bewilderment and nausea.
Oh, God.
Therese put her hands on his chest, whole and unscarred.
Oscar, lie down. You can't move yet.
No time. We gotta get Marty.
He swung his feet over the edge of the cot. They slammed down on the ground.
Oh! Ah.
Oh, Jesus, you're crazy!
Therese put her shoulder in his armpit to support him. The smell of her hair soothed him, then made him sick again. His vision faded and returned.
They'll kill him.
His knees failed him, and he sagged against Therese, who steadied herself with one hand on the cot. She couldn't carry him. He'd have to dig deep. He took a shaking step. It took them nearly a minute to get halfway across the tiny room, but they made it. Therese still dangled the ATTD between two fingers.
No. Get rid of it. It could go off any minute.
Therese set the ATTD down on the cot and helped Britton walk.
What's going on?
Oh, later. We've got to move.
Where are we going?
Just look for MPs.
They found them in abundance. A knot of them swarmed the urinalysis section, carbines pointed earthward, but fingers braced tensely over triggers. Marty stood placidly inside a protective ring of surly goblin orderlies. The tent thronged with onlookers, furious goblins, soldiers, and orderlies alike. Half of the MPs faced inward, keeping the angry goblins from assaulting the translator. The other half faced outward, keeping the equally enraged humans from storming Marty. Truelove and Downer stood outside the ring of MPs. Truelove spotted Britton and ran to him.
They're trying to see if he had any accomplices on the staff. I've been trying to tell him it's just a custom, but nobody's listening. Wow. Are you okay?
Need to talk to him.
They're not going to let you. What the hell is going on out there?
Stay here. I'm begging you.
Therese helped him forward. He tapped one of the MPs on the center of his body armor and pointed at the goblin. The soldier wrinkled his brow.
Shouldn't you be lying down?
Therese gestured to Marty.
Please! We all know what you're gonna do to him. Just let us say goodbye.
Fine by me, ma'am, so long as you're willing to pay for the lawyer when they write me up for disciplinary action.
The MP took a half step to better block their progress.
Marty!
Three MPs took off, running for the cache entrance. Marty looked up, eyes widening as he noticed Britton.
I see him! I see Fred!
The MP officer, a pale-faced lieutenant who looked almost as young as Downer, pulled out his pistol, leveling it at Marty.
Calm down! Just calm the hell down!
But Marty would not calm down.
Britton!
The goblin contractors clawed at the MPs, a few of whom began to flail with the butts of their carbines.
This is getting out of control, Lieutenant. I'd put that gun down if I were you. You take a shot in here and you're gonna hit a friendly anyway.
Damn it! Let him through! Let him through!
The crowd of goblins immediately calmed, stepping back and surrounding Marty again as the MP stepped aside, allowing Therese and Truelove to help Britton into the ring. He shrugged off their grip, kneeling before Marty. The goblin placed his hands on Britton's shoulders, huge eyes looking into his. The white spots of his face were smeared, his breath sour.
You hurt!
Yeah, but it's gonna be okay. We have to go now.
The lieutenant looked on nervously, and the ring of MPs began to tighten. When Britton raised his head, Marty looked at him, eyes wide and uncomprehending. Downer was still outside the ring. Britton turned to Truelove.
We're leaving. Come with us.
Truelove took a step back, slowly shaking his head.
What are you doing? Pick him up!
They were out of time.
I'll come back for you.
A gate opened behind Marty. Beyond it, he could see a bowl of rose moss where he'd gone on his first camping trip in the mountains of Vermont's largest state park. Bill pushed Marty through the gate with one hand and swung to race into it with the other. Then he pitched forward, falling halfway into the portal. Truelove stood still, mouth open and head shaking. Downer was behind him, arm draped across his chest and holding him back, her face contorted.
No, don't go! Don't go!
The lieutenant raised his pistol. Britton yanked his knees to his chest and shut the gate. He lay still for a moment, letting the biting cold chase the fog from his mind, leaving only the pain in his chest. Britton had forgotten how strong the sense of constant magical current was in the source. Back on the home plane, he felt barren, his own current lonely and isolated. Marty was gawping at his surroundings.
Oh my God, Oscar, they'll blow it up. I left it in the cache.
And Britton knew the cache was about to be overwhelmed with work.
I'll take care of it.
He swallowed hard, dug deep inside himself for the energy to open another gate. Staggering to his feet and lurching back into the room where Therese had extracted it, he snatched the blinking device off the cot. He stumbled on until he found air as cold as the bowl of rose moss where Therese and Marty awaited him. He dropped the ATTD in front of the stainless steel surface of the industrial chiller. He swept his eyes past the goblin corpses in their various states of dissection, and his eyes alighted on a rack of winter parkas bolted to one of the tent support rods that held up the cold chamber. He snatched three and pushed himself back through the gate. Then he collapsed beside Shrek. He managed to lift his head and shut the gate just as the ATTD detonated. He gave up the fight and surrendered to it because he had escaped Fob Frontier. Because at long last, he was free.
You can dress it up any way you like. Cover it with laws and fancy proclamations. None of it can change the truth, which is simply this. You're terrified. Humans are in the presence of creatures that look just like them, but are to them as humans are to insects. This is why the SOC is so utterly disgusting. Why the hell would you work for cockroaches? They should be working for us. Hell, they should be slaving for us. And in time, they will. Render, Houston Street Selfers recorded message for sock sorcerers, distributed on the internet and the streets of New York City.
They lay in silence for a few minutes before Britton shook himself and stumbled to his feet. He shrugged the parka over his shoulders and tossed one to Therese. She helped Marty into his, draping it over his oversized head so that he looked like a small child bundled up for the cold. Therese placed her hand on Britton's chest, and he could feel the magic beginning to do its work again.
Just let me double check.
After a moment, she raised her hands to his shoulders.
Oscar, you've got to send me back.
What? I just got us out of there.
There are sick people, hurt people. I have to help. You're safe now, but I'm not going to run with you. They need me there, Oscar.
You have no idea. They're going to need you more than ever now. Therese, you can't. They'll kill you. How long do you think it's going to take them to figure out how I got the ATTD out? Do you honestly think they'll turn a blind eye to that?
Maybe they won't figure it out. Maybe I can explain.
Don't be ridiculous. What do you think they're going to do?
Oscar, what the hell was going on there? Something was happening. Something started this all off. Tell me, damn it. There's a problem, isn't there? People are being hurt.
Yes.
Send me back. I have to help.
His heart caught in his throat as the image of the intact Quonset huts flooded his brain. They stood, untouched, in the middle of the devastated sass. The occupants were still inside, Britton knew. Swift, Pyre, Peapod, Tsunami, Wave Sign. The goblins would be pouring over that ground first. And that wasn't even counting the other goblins, Marty's tribesmen who worked on the fob. Would they be punished for helping Marty escape? Maybe. But there were hundreds of them spread all over the fob. Britton knew he couldn't save them all. But the SAS enrollees were all in one place, and that was a start.
You want to help? Help me.
Where are we going? What are we doing?
I need you to stay here.
Come with you.
Oscar, what is this about?
Marty, please, just sit tight and don't move. You won't be able to help us out where we're going. And I can't stand having gotten you out of there only to get you killed. I promise I'll be back. I promise.
Britton unclipped his pocket knife and handed it to the goblin. It looked larger in his small hands, but still woefully inadequate.
I'll be back.
Britton turned to Therese.
I freed Scylla. I thought I had to. I was a fool. She gutted the fob like a piece of rotten fruit. I don't know how bad it is, but I assume the neighboring goblin tribes are hitting it hard right now. That's what all that noise was. She left the sass and Rollies alive, but they're right in the path of the advance. If there's any chance of helping anyone to race, it should be them. I'm not happy that the Sock has a fight on its hands, or that people are going to be hurt, but I'll be damned if I'm going back to them again. You want to help someone? Help me help Wavesign and the rest of them. I put them in this position, but the Sock put us all in it first. I can't undo what I've done, but I can try to fix some of it. And I can do it better with your help.
Therese stared at him, mouth gaping.
Please, Therese. There's no time. We need to go right now. I don't even know if they're still alive, but we've got to try.
God damn it, Oscar.
You want to chew me out? Fine. Do it later.
He opened a gate just outside the scattered remains of Scylla's pillbox.
Now or never.
And the Quonset huts were still standing, awash in a sea of goblins. The battle had pushed on beyond the Sass's borders. Britton could make out army fire teams in the distance, firing from behind the cover of a few armored personnel carriers. Apaches wheeled overhead. Aeromancers danced in between them. The sky was clouded with rocks, circling over the fray, their backs loaded with goblin crews, discharging clouds of javelins on the battle below them. Squadrons of wolf-born goblins charged among the soldiers, swinging halberds. White chalk sorcerers ran in their midst, their flowing currents sensible to Britton even from that distance. As Britton watched, one armored personnel carrier was engulfed in magical fire. A helicopter flew low over the fight. A white-painted goblin sorcerer spread his arms, and the earth erupted into a lurching spike that clipped the spinning rotors. Swift floated above the Quonset huts. A few of the enrollees had gathered around the No-No crew on the roof. Swift spread his arms. Wavesign knelt on the curved dome. He managed a short burst of carefully controlled magic, sharp tendrils of ice that spread to scattering storms as they buffeted the goblins below, driving them back. The havoc seemed to have had the opposite effect on Tsunami. She crouched behind Wavesign, hugging her arms around herself, crying. Pyre swept his arms over his head, sending balls of fire arcing down into the mass. Peapod gestured, and Earth exploded in the midst of the goblins, a gaping crater that sucked dozens of them in. A javelin burst from the throng and caught another enrollee in the chest. Britton watched as a rock banked toward Swift, its back brimming with goblins, leveling stolen rifles at him. Swift's attention was riveted on the assault from below, oblivious to the airborne threat moving toward him. Britton exploded into motion, running forward and extending a hand. A gate sliced open alongside the giant bird, severing one wing.
Come on! Swift! Clear a fucking lane and come on!
Some of the goblins to the rear of the mass surrounding the hut were beginning to turn, their eyes narrowing. Britton opened a gate on the roof of the Quonset hut, but the enrollees spun to face it, disbelieving.
Go through! Go through, you idiots!
Britton shut the gate to open it again in front of Therese to intercept a spear hurtling toward her belly. Britton's skin began to itch, suddenly, maddeningly. His throat swelled, his tongue feeling as if it had been rolled in dust. Blinked, his eyes burning, the goblin sorcerer moved toward them. It thrust its arms forward, and Britton felt his whole body cry out for water as if he'd been wandering a desert for weeks. He swept his arm to one side, sliding the gate toward it. But the sorcerer threw itself backward, and he shut the gate to follow its progress. Another goblin raced toward him, a huge bearded axe waving over its head. Britton managed to drop to his side, aiming a kick at the creature's abdomen. An arc of lightning plowed through the goblin. The goblin hydromancer's grip on Britton was still tight, and and he crawled in the dirt, feeling his skin begin to peel away. Suddenly, the magic's grip released him. He struggled to his feet to see Therese standing, her lips peeled back, fingers extended. Goblins before them liquefied, flesh melting onto quivering trunks, bared teeth dripping away, sliding into running gums that vanished to reveal shrinking jawbones. For the moment, the circle of goblins surged back, horrified by the carnage.
She had sworn she'd never rend again.
Therese's courage relaxed. Britton could see her face fall, horrified at the damage she'd wrought.
Can't worry about that right now.
Britton snapped the gate open on the roof again and motioned to Swift.
Go! Go!
Swift gaped at the carnage beneath him for a moment before lighting on the roof and herding the remaining enrollees into the gate. Two Kiowas appeared on the horizon, banking sharply toward them. The goblins broke their paralysis and turned to face the new threat. Britton closed the gate and opened it in front of her. Therese stood, dumb, her eyes fixed on the field before her. Her mouth worked silently.
She's no Scylla.
Draped his arm around her shoulder as gently as he could and walked her through the gate. Stepping into the bowl of moss where the enrollees had gathered around Marty. Swift stared around him at the woods, cradling his elbows, stupefied. Wavesign crouched at the base of a tree. Marty had been busy in their absence, his arms full of mushrooms. A small pile of sampled plants had been gathered on a rock beside him. Now he stood and dashed among the sassing rollies, looking over wounds and producing his worn leather pouch.
There's nothing I can do for you. You need a hydromancer, not a healer.
Therese walked off, squatting by a young woman with a gash across her face, cupping her cheek, letting her magic heal the wound.
Therese?
She ignored him, losing herself in the bustle of her work.
Later. It's not safe here. You're in a state park not too far off the beaten path. The Sock still has a portomancer. They can be here in an instant. How long before you're discovered? Before these people freeze?
He looked back toward the crowd of enrollees. They squatted, miserable, most looking too shocked to do much. But Britton knew it wouldn't last long.
Now this is your fault. You got them into this. Now you have to get them out.
Swift looked up at him, his eyes wide.
You're thinking the same thing. You have no idea what to do either. You were so focused on getting free that you never gave a minute's thought to what you'd do once you got there.
But Britton remembered running before. He remembered his world spinning away from him and keeping on regardless. He remembered staring at a hanging payphone receiver, smelling like stale beer.
Baby steps. The first thing this crew needs is a leader.
Peapod alone seemed to have any presence of mind. She swept her arms upward, and the trees bowed, extending branches to shelter. Tires heaped a pile of stone, running his hand over them until they glowed red-hot, warmer and brighter than any wood fire Britton had ever seen. The enrollees gathered around it, arms draped around knees. Britton worried that the light might alert the authorities, but figured that the comfort was more needed at the moment. For now, panic had been staved off.
Thanks. What happened back there with Scylla?
Britton almost told him, then decided to keep it to himself.
You can't afford a fight over that just now.
Instead, he ignored the question.
Where are we?
Vermont. State Park. I went camping here once.
We can't stay here.
No, we can't.
Well, we could head to Mexico or Canada.
So we can get rounded up and handed over as part of the reciprocity agreement? Mexico is a damn vassal state.
You got a better idea, Peapod?
Why can't we just stay here? Or maybe go to some other wilderness? What about Alaska?
We're not survivalists.
We don't have to be. We've got magic.
That won't do us any good once the Sock starts hunting for us. They're better than we are.
Bet you wish you'd spent a little more time practicing with Salamander when you'd had the chance, eh, No-No Boy?
This is getting out of control. Someone has to leave before things come totally apart. That's enough.
Britton felt fingers brush his own and looked down to see Marty at his side, looking wide-eyed at him.
Much angry. Why? Why angry?
Because I hurt them. I didn't mean to, but I did. Now I have to make that right, Marty.
We have to find a place where the Sock can't find us. That place can't be in this world. It has to be in the Source and well away from the Fob. We don't know what else the SOC knows about the lay of the land there, but they will have a harder time finding and reaching us.
We Matab Bonsara. We always help.
This is my Matab Bonsara now. The army is going to come for us.
I know. Safe place.
Yes, Marty, a safe place. We have to take them there.
Remember, Birdhead?
Leering in the torchlight, the striped bird skull, hung on the goblin fastness where Britain had saved Fitzy's life and been punished for it, rose in his mind.
I remember.
Go there. I take you safe place.
Man, I really don't want to go back there.
Britain racked his brain for any image that he could recall well enough to gate to. But the landscape beneath the helicopter had blurred by too fast. The only thing he remembered well enough was Bob Frontier and the fortress. He could take the men some distance from it, but it would have to be in sight.
Can I take us back somewhere else?
If not there, then not nowhere safe place. Go, Birdhead. Then safe place.
This is your tribe? This is with your Matab and Sara?
Marty nodded. Britain felt his emotions well up at the creature's quickness to help strangers, but now was not the time to show it.
Uskar. Okay. Always help. You important.
He smiled gently, then leaned forward and imitated the human gesture, hugging Britain about the waist as best he could.
Important. Everything okay.
Britain patted the goblin's shoulders as he mastered himself. At last he turned to the remnants of the tribe, hoping his voice wouldn't break.
Marty knows of a place we can go. Someplace safe in the source. We're gonna take 15 minutes to get everyone patched up as best we can. Then we're out of here.
Back to the source? We just escaped from there.
This is only temporary. Do you honestly think there's a place in the entire U.S. safe for us? Or in any bordering nation? Besides, I can only gate us places I've seen. Or did you propose we walk to wherever we're going to hide out? I know this isn't ideal. I'm not offering you an end to running, just another place to run to.
What the hell happened anyway? How the hell did that witch get free in the first place?
Swift looked frankly at him, arms folded across his chest.
You'll have to tell them eventually. If they're going to follow you, it has to be under honest terms. That's my fault. You want to blame someone, you can blame me. But that's not going to help anything. I've been soldiering long enough to know that if we're going to live through this, it's going to take discipline and teamwork. You may have done things however the hell you wanted to when you were on the run, but that changed in the sass. And it's not going to change back just because you're free of it. You want to judge me? Judge me later. After we are all safe. After this latest round of running is at an end. I can't bring the dead back to life. All I can do is save the lives that are remaining. What we need is a safe place. Someone to shelter us until we can figure out what you want to do next. Marty can provide that safe place, and I can take us there. It's the only chance we've got. And for it to work, you're going to have to trust me and let me help you. You may not like it, but it's the only way.
What if we stand and fight?
If you stand against the SOC, you will die. Make no mistake. You have great heart, but you are too few and too